The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
It's my nature now to record everything I'm passing through. Streets, faces, cities.
Hey everyone, another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. Today we're closing out Avant-Garde Month with 1976's Lost, 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 directed by Jonas Mekas. Before we do that, though, I just wanted to remind everyone that we have a website you can check out at loosecannons.net, and we fairly recently added commentary to that, so if you want to complain about our podcasts or our posture or how bad we smell or whatever, feel free to join the discussion.
We smell pretty bad
on our website, and of course we also have a video up that you can find on the website or at vimeo.com if you search for the Loose Cannons account, and we'll be having more videos up soon. Also have writings up there, and you know, lots of Loose Cannons content besides these podcasts, so remember to check it out. Alright, heralds and denouncements. Let's kick it off with Patrick. Do you have anything you would like to herald or denounce?
I don't have anything that I would like to herald or denounce.
Okay.
2 weeks in a row. Nothing for Bezel? Patrick.
Very middle of the road, sorry.
It's fair. I watched Jackie Chan's Project A, and it's pretty great. He does a lot of stuff where he hurts himself really bad, including one thing that's an homage to Harold Lloyd, where he's hanging off a clock, but then he just falls, and he really falls like three stories and lands on his face, and it looks really painful. And then they, like, it's from really far away, and you just see him fall in slow motion, and then they show it again, and then they zoom in on his face so you know for sure that it's Jackie Chan, who really just, like, super hurt himself.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't really see anything great or terrible lately.
Okay. I'm going to herald Kicking and Screaming, Noah Baumbach's debut feature, not the Will Ferrell soccer comedy. It's a movie that I've seen a couple times and that I loved as a kid, but I was wondering if whether or not it was going to be like pretty sexist upon rewatch, and I didn't think that it was. It was just as funny as I remember it, and like, it's basically a Woody Allen movie except for with none of the gross things that make Woody Allen so gross and pleasant. It's just a lot of people talking about how uncomfortable they find life and relationships and stuff like that, except for, like, actually funny, and the human beings are, like, you know, sometimes bad people, but, like, relatable still and whatnot. So I really enjoyed that, and I'm glad that I did, since as some of you may know, I think that that movie actually influenced where I went to college. I'd tell that story some other time, though.
Good times. You should always choose your college based on your movie taste.
It was unintentional. I didn't even know that Noah Baumbach went to my alma mater until after I was already there. Mm. Anyways, I guess moving on to Lost, Lost, Lost. Patrick is the picker this time, so he's gonna tell us what happened in the movie.
I will tell you. And this movie actually has a little bit more of a narrative than we're used to in these avant-garde films. It's basically the filmmaker Jonas Mekas chronicling his immigration to America from Lithuania, and just filming different events that happen while he's living in New York. A lot of it is, you know, him sort of walking the streets, meeting people, working as a writer with a group of sort of creatives in New York, and then there's a lot of footage of protests over various things happening in New York, and then some of it is trips that he took with his friends, especially one near the end where he goes to a film conference with his friends and they get turned away and have to sleep in their cars, and they just just go on kind of a I guess kind of antiquated adventures at this point, like the types of adventures you can't really have anymore. But it's basically a document of what was for Jonas Mekas during that time period in his life.
Basil?
I didn't really like this movie. I thought that some of the images were really interesting, and as like a document, I thought it was pretty satisfying in some regards, but I found his narration really annoying, and it just kept reminding me of other sort of essay documentarians like Chris Marker or Agnes Varda, and feeling like they're really trying to grapple with lots of ideas, and that he was really just kind of, I don't know, it just struck me as sort of solipsistic, and like he wasn't really, he kept bringing up sort of ideas, but it didn't feel like for as long as the movie is, he really progressed in any way that felt satisfying to me, as far as like either embellishing on the ideas or progressing through them. It just sort of felt like the beginning and the end were at more or less the same place.
Yep. I didn't like this movie at all. I was apprehensive in the beginning, looking at like watching an avant-garde movie that would take about 3 hours, and basically I was right, at least for me. This really didn't work. I also really didn't like Mekas' narration, even though the themes being like immigration and like the basic like certain aspects of life associated with like being disenfranchised and like alone, the movie really like spelled out whatever it had to say extremely in a really basic, flat way, and I don't know, like me as a person who immigrated twice in his life without wanting to, I felt like I should have connected to this movie way more than I did. In the end, I just, especially because seeing like Mekas even has like Latvian roots, I think, or like Russian roots, I don't know. It just didn't work for me at all. I did like the imagery occasionally, and I liked the way it flown together. I liked some of the scenes involving like the weddings or just people sitting together and like just people, other people's faces. But whenever Mekas' narration came back in, I just faded right out of the movie.
I like this movie a lot. I watched this movie though, like the first half I watched like several months ago, and then the second half I watched today. And I remember when I was first watching it, I thought it was only okay. And then what I watched today, I thought was really, really good. And it's one of those experiences that makes me question whether or not I enjoy a movie is mostly based on how I feel at that moment, what's going on with me. If I could watch essentially the same movie at two different periods of time and feel pretty drastically different about how I was feeling about it. I agree with everything that you guys have said. I just am on the opposite end. I like the solipsism. I like Fix's voice. So, you know, I don't really disagree with you as to what the movie is doing. It's just I like those things. He even kind of reminds me a little bit of an avant-garde Ross McElwee, who is also has an annoying voice and a solipsistic.
Yeah, I was going to bring up McElwee because I did feel like there's a big similarity here. And I did like this movie. although I will say I had some reservations about it. I feel like there's a real... in here where he goes on like a tangent about haikus and stuff like that that I didn't really connect with. It felt more sort of stereotypically avant-garde movie where he's just like saying one word over and over again, where he's like the trees, like childhood, and I was like oh brother this. But for the rest of it, I enjoyed what he had to say about, you know, being sort of an exile and all the themes about, you know, big countries versus small countries, and the protest angles, and I like the way that he films a lot of the protests. Instead of focusing on mostly the struggle, he focuses on kind of the way that people commune together in those protest groups, and how they are sort of creating their own little communities in those protests. And so I liked a lot about, you know, the way that he talked about like people sort of forming communities as exiles in a way. I enjoy his filmmaking style, although I will say I didn't enjoy his editing in this one as much as I have some of his other films. I feel like he gets more experimental with the way that he edits things in some of his other films, and this one was pretty straightforward, but I did like it.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not so much his voice that annoys me, although his sort of flat delivery sometimes bothered me. It was more just, like, what he was saying and the fact that I felt a lot of the time, like, I would see an image and the combination of the image and whatever music he was playing, I'd be like, I got it. And then suddenly the music would cut out and he would interrupt it to... basically, as Ilya said, spell out exactly what those two things were supposed to mean already, and then I'd be like, okay, I mean, like, I got it, Mikus, like, it's fine.
Did okay. Y'all watch this all in one heap, or?
I sort of did. I was gonna get up really early this morning and watch it, but then I fell asleep pretty early last night and woke up like after an hour and a half and couldn't get back to sleep, so I watched the first half of it super late last night, like from like 11 till 1:30 in the morning or something like that, and then I watched the second half this morning when I woke up. So and I actually I actually like the first two parts the most. I think his use of, especially like the regional Lithuanian music, is really cool. And that once he switches to more just like classical music, like Chopin and stuff like that, I thought his choices were a lot more boring in the pop music. Like, I was like, this just sounds like any movie soundtrack, versus when he's using a lot of the Lithuanian music. I was like, hey, I would go to a party that Mika's DJs. It'd be sweet.
It's really hard to picture him as a DJ somehow.
Yeah, the reason that I asked that was because that, like, I wouldn't say that I wasn't paying attention to the words, because I was, but that after watching it for about 30 minutes, I started to get into, like, a bit of a hypnotic rhythm with, like, the movie and whatnot, and that it wasn't so much that, like, what he was saying, but, like, his voice saying these words, like the part that Patrick mentioned, I kind of liked when he was repeating everything, and I was like, he just has such a cool voice. I like hearing him say stuff, and yeah. But the main thing that I liked about the movie actually is that I feel like he captures people's faces really, really well. I see a lot of documentaries where everybody sort of looks the same somehow, even when they're different, and like I get no idea of like who they are. And there's that part where he's doing the screen tests, which is probably my favorite part of the whole film. And like each of those people that he does a screen test for, I'm like, I feel like I really know this person. When even though they don't like speak, they're just like standing around smoking cigarettes or looking at the camera and laughing and stuff like that. And I was like, you know, sometimes I see like 2-hour movies with characters and I don't feel like I know them as well as I know these people after, you know, a 30-second screen test.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the way that he shot people's faces just in general in the movie. I think there are a lot of times where people sort of notice him filming and just like give the camera like a weird look. And it's always pretty funny, like the way that they look at the camera, and especially the children that he's shooting. Like the children will like give him like crazy looks and stuff like that. There were a lot of good moments like that in this movie. I really enjoyed that like candidness of those moments.
Yeah, sometimes I really liked those, and then other times they felt sort of weirdly invasive, because I could tell sometimes people would be a little uncomfortable that he's filming them and like kind of feel like they're now sort of aware that they're performing for this guy, and then it would still just hold on them for a really long time, and I was like, man, he must be like kind of a bum to like hang out with, just like like just sticking a camera in your face all day long. I'm like, all right, like...
Yeah, but I like that he leaves that in the movie, though, too, because it's not
true.
He's, like, trying to make, like, a Maisel's documentary where, you know, it's like, oh, everything is supernatural. It's, like, it's more like, I say super, like, everything is really natural and, like, it's reality. But his movies are more like, oh, yeah, we're aware that he's showing us what he wants us to see.
Yeah, I'm going to say to Basil, you probably shouldn't watch Dave McElwee films. And people, like, tell him to turn the camera off at points, and he's like, no.
McElwee is super obvious about that
fact. It's like an anniversary. It's like a engagement party for him or something like that. And they're like, stop filming and have fun at the party. And he's like, no.
Yeah, he does that. He does that when he's on a date with someone, too. Like, he's filming on the date.
But at least, like, in that moment, he's sort of doing a double thing where he's acknowledging his own sort of, like, rude invasiveness. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. There were certain times where, especially when Mikus was shooting women, I felt like it just got a little bit creepy and male-gazy. I was like, stop shooting the women this way. I feel uncomfortable, like... They're just trying to hang out at a party, and now you're just like staring at them. I have that issue with Chris Marker too, who's very
excited. Especially have that issue with Chris Marker when it comes to women who of color.
Yeah,
Chris Marker likes to stare at women of color for like a really long time.
He loves that exoticness.
I'm trying to avoid that word, but thank you.
Exotic. Yep.
Yeah, there's a part in Sans Soleil where a woman like catches him filming and like looks at him, and something about the narration like basically implies like, yeah, she's a little uncomfortable, but actually she likes it. And I was like, gross. Oh, boy.
Jesus Christ.
She was totally asking for it. Oh, brother.
I never really did feel that here, at least.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely doesn't go anywhere near that far, but there's a couple of times, especially at some of the parties where I felt that. But
yeah,
I mean, at least, like, I guess if you're friends with Jonas Mikus, you just get used to it. You're like, oh yeah, he's just gonna bring his bollocks around.
Yeah, he's gonna bring his bollocks and just gonna be a drag to be around him.
But I also like that he himself is being filmed at points in the movie too, like he himself is in front of the camera, so it's not like he's just always the gaze. Like, he's also not against being gazed at, so that's a good thing, I suppose.
Like, well, probably wants I bet he hands the camera over, is like, hey, film me doing this.
Yeah, he does that at certain points, like when he's having breakfast with Francis, he would certainly have had to hand her the camera to film him like eating pancakes or whatever.
Oh, I was going to say, it made me think of this like pretty awesome movie that I haven't seen all of, but it's sort of like a more of an installation piece, but these two filmmakers who'd never really met before agreed to go on a road trip together, but they brought like video cameras with really long battery lives, and they just film each other the whole time. So like whenever they're looking at each other, it's just two people holding cameras, and it cuts back and forth between them. Like you can barely see their faces because they're like big bulky video cameras that just cover it, and they just drive around the country like that, like filming different stuff and cut it together. It was pretty awesome to watch. It made me want to watch the rest of it. I can't remember the name though.
I also like the scene where you see Mikas's footage of him like filming flowers or whatever, and then you see the reverse footage of the other person who's filming him like filming the flowers, and you just see him like doing the camera. I like that, like pulling back of the curtain. It's like, oh yeah, here's how he did that. He just held the camera and just swung it around.
Just getting back a little bit to the male gazey stuff, I laughed really hard at the part where his friend holds up the nudie picture though and starts making faces at it. Do you remember that at all?
I do remember that. Yeah,
I thought that was kind of like, I don't know, like poking at some like avant-garde movies use of just like nude women to, you know,
kind of, yeah, foregrounding
to elevate right. The audience. Yeah. It's like, ooh, it's all about sex, and his like friend was like, like making like Groucho Marx faces, and then like, you know, I don't know.
Was that his brother? There's a lot with his brother in this movie.
So, I honestly couldn't tell you who anyone was.
Yeah, I don't remember what his brother looks like exactly, so...
Yeah. Very similar to him, actually.
Yeah.
Would you believe?
There's a part where he says he's hanging out with P. Adam Sitney, who wrote a book about the avant-garde that I read, so I was like, hey, I read a book by that guy. There he is. That's what he looks like.
There's also a really... nice bit where they show like the sort of lost footage from that film that they made.
Oh yeah, that had one of my favorite shots in the whole movie when the guy gets hit by the car and then it's just his hand in a puddle with the rain. I was like, that's a really cool shot.
I liked all of the fake stuff, the filming stuff. I liked when the people were like cavemen or whatever chasing each other around in the snow too.
Yeah, the movies within the movie were pretty interesting, I thought. I liked the way he said at the end of the movie that, or at the end of what they had shot of the movie, like, the woman goes to the park to see the trees and the flowers because they're alive. Something like that. I was like, that's a really beautiful...
Yeah, well, I mean, like, yeah, that sort of thing, I totally get why also people, you know, could totally like that. Mikas has this, like, weird, naive thing about him, where it's very purposefully naive. Yeah. Like he's saying stuff like, you will never know what loneliness is like for a person from a small country, an immigrant from a small country. And it's like, okay, all right, I guess I won't then. You know, like... But he's like, he's so direct. Like, there's very little. Like, he's the way he is poetic. It's like he's not willfully obscure about it. It's pretty like there. It's all there. So at least like, you know, it didn't really click for me. But I understand why, you know, maybe maybe you guys or whatever, like, what you liked about it. I can understand why you did. I think I'm
pretty susceptible to that stuff, actually, because I had the same sort of disagreement about the movie Chain that Jim Cohen did, and basically everyone being like, oh, it's Sans Soleil light, like, it's Sans Soleil for people who want it all laid out for them. It's just, you know, it's just copies of things that have already been achieved, like, 20 years before it was released.
Yeah,
I enjoy that directness with Mikas, though.
Yeah. But the idea that he's playing sort of an artistic style, as opposed to, like, you know, I don't know. Yeah. And that, like, I just, you know, sort of fall for that. I mean, I definitely like naivety. I'll admit that's a fault of mine.
Yeah, I remember in the avant-garde class that I took, my professor, I think for the only time I've ever taken a class with her, she admitted to not liking something that we were watching in class, and it was Jonas Mekas. And she was like, I feel like he's just ripping off Brackage in really boring ways. But not as much in this one, but there's another movie he made called Walden that's very, very much like just a rip on Brackage as far as the visual style goes. It's a lot of like moving around like a la Dog Star Man, and that one, we watched clips from that and it was really hard to sit through. This one's much better. There's like a part where he spends 15 minutes at the circus and it's just like watching the exact same things, but not in a really interesting way because the footage is super sped up and he just is whipping the camera around so you can't hardly even see what's going on. And I was just like, this is the most interminable circus I've ever seen.
Because that's essentially what the short film Notes on the Circus is. Maybe that's like an excerpt from that movie, I don't know, but
yeah,
I really like Notes on the Circus. I enjoyed that style. That was the first thing I saw by Mekas, and that was what drew me into like wanting to watch more of his stuff. That was actually what I was talking about earlier when I said it wasn't nearly as experimental. Like that's the kind of stuff that I liked from Mekas.
You should watch Stan Brackage.
I should. I'm planning to.
I will say one thing that I didn't like about this movie was when he used color film. I didn't feel like it added really anything to those moments. He would just go to color, and I was like, what? Like, I felt like it was supposed to be like a big moment, and then I was like, but it doesn't, I don't know. I have no idea why he used color here, and it could have been fine without it.
Yeah,
I feel like
I didn't even notice it, honestly.
I feel like there was, I feel like it wasn't even like a choice, probably, and it would probably just be like sometimes he had color 16 millimeter stock of the things that he wanted to put in the movie, so he just put them in, and then most of the time it was the black and white 8 millimeter. It didn't feel to me like he was necessarily like punctuating things. I don't know, nothing felt really punctuate-y though.
I thought the scene where they go to the film conference in, I think it was like Vermont or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That in particular was very beautiful, and I believe that was color, wasn't it? That was in, I think it was.
Talking about when they sleep in their cars, that's in black and white.
It is. Wow. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I remember like. I don't know. For some reason,
it's
I can like
right at the end
colors.
Of Reel 2 is the first time that it's color, and then at the very end of the movie.
Yeah, I thought that scene was really beautiful though, and I also thought that the guy that he was with, where they were like filming in the field, like that dude is super handsome. I was like, wow, who is that guy? Like he's amazing looking. He's got like his like tussled blonde hair, he's got the blanket wrapped around him, and I was like, wow, who is he? Must find out who he is.
Good luck.
I thought there were a lot of handsome people in this movie, actually.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. Actually, I thought that was like eye candy here. It was really funny.
This New York artists in the 60s and 70s were super beautiful.
Oh yeah,
I thought it would be really cool. As I was watching it, I was like, I think it would be an awesome experiment for someone to try and like recreate this movie in Williamsburg now, like find what streets he shot on and shoot from similar angles, because I bet it's amazing how different it looks like.
Yeah, probably.
It's still all Lithuanians though, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, right.
It's Lithuanian hipsters.
That's where hipsters come from.
Lithuania.
They're all from Lithuania.
Yeah.
That's why Pete Holmes is so cool.
Yes.
He's not cool. Just in case anyone was confused. Whether or not that was sarcasm.
He's a funny guy, but not cool in the slightest.
I will say that's kind of what I like about Pete Holmes, is that he's just not trying to be cool at all.
Oh yeah, well, he's fine. He's funny, but he basically is, like he said, he's like a Christian camp counselor who became a comedian.
Yeah,
I love that.
I guess that's what him and Mika's have in common. Is they're both not really cool people.
No, there's Russ McAuley.
They're more like sincere.
Back to
yeah, they're really other. Earnest, mm-hmm. sincere.
Yeah,
McAuley is a lot funnier though.
It's true.
I will say that that's a difference between him and Mikas. I only laughed like once or twice during this movie, was I laugh all right. the time during Sherman's March.
Yeah.
I thought there was a lot of cool stuff with nature. Baz already mentioned the hand in the puddle, but I like the way that he shot snow, and then there were like a bunch of ice floes and a lake that I thought was really cool, and rain and stuff like that. I really enjoyed watching how he shot weather.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. I would totally, if I wasn't so lazy, I would love to re-edit this movie and just take his audio out and put good movie music in instead. Because the part when he's shooting the snow is really cool, but then he like comes in and he's like, the snow, the snow.
That did get to me a little bit, the whole haiku section where he's just like saying the stuff over and over again. I kept waiting for him to drop the title, but he never did.
Yeah, it's true. He was saying everything three times, it would fit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Would y'all think about the part where the guy goes down to the end of the path and all he finds is a small pile of rabbit shit?
Yeah, that was that same section.
Yeah.
I was just like, okay. Yes. All right, I get it.
Is that death? You saying that's what death is like? You go to rabbit the end poop. Of the path, and all you find is a small pile of rabbit shit. Yeah.
I thought it was just like a similar, I don't know, the thing that everyone says, that if you're trying to look to get to the end of something, you're going to be disappointed because it's all about the journey, man.
Very hippie-ish.
I mean, he was hanging out with all those, like, beatniks and other people in the 60s, so.
Yeah.
Including some black people. You don't normally see that, man.
That's right.
I mean, and during the 60s, I think it was more common.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in avant-garde movies, I don't know.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's
you definitely had some black people in the, I believe it was like a little theater company that he was filming at one point, where they were like practicing a play or something. I don't know exactly what they were doing, but it looked kind of like that.
They clearly weren't as close friends though, because you didn't see them all the time.
Yeah.
I was like, you should become friends with those dudes, Jonas Mikas.
I bet they had some interesting stories.
I wonder if they can relate to the idea of isolation. Being a stranger in a strange land.
They won't understand. They can't understand.
Sometimes I really liked the music and sometimes I didn't. There was some really high-pitched noise that he would use sometimes, or like high-pitched sound, and I was like, no, thank you.
Yeah, that was in the middle of the movie. I think it was people tuning their instruments and he just stretched it out for a really long time. But yeah, I agree. I was like, oh god, is this where it's going from? This like cool Lithuanian music to just like weird experimental single tones.
A little too structuralist to that. Let's get back to the more lyrical avant-garde. Come on.
Well, I guess that's supposed to also mirror like, in a way, immigrant experience, where at first you're holding on to, like, you know, the music where you're from, and or like the culture where you're from, and then once you surrender yourself to the endless loneliness of never being there again, you like discover weird new abstract sounds
and abstract eventually forms. Assimilate into boring classical music.
Exactly.
That's true.
Yeah.
I think that's a very good reading that I don't buy at all.
Right.
For even a second.
Well, that's what I'm here for.
Maybe I would have bought it if you liked the film.
Yeah.
I don't know. I did like
exactly.
how he, I wrote this in my notes, how he sort of ends Reel 2 with like really upbeat music, but it's a really sad ending where he's talking about like falling into a thousand pieces and how he feels very disconnected and everything. And I like the juxtaposition of using the upbeat music into that ending for that reel.
Mm-hmm.
I also thought it was weird at one point, one of the reels either ends or begins with a mistaken title card because it shows diaries, notes, and sketches instead of lost, lost, lost. And I was like, wait a minute, did they splice in a different piece of the film? Like, did they splice in the wrong reel here?
Mm-hmm. But I think also it only happened at the end of Reel 5 where it said copyright Jonas Mekas, and I was like, but there's more movie left. And I kept going.
Yeah.
And then it did it again after Reel 6. I was like,
Yeah, maybe partway through the movie he was like, oh, wait, I better make sure nobody steals this.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Gotta get that copyright in there.
Yeah.
Even though
this movie's gonna make a fortune.
I was gonna say even though there's a pretty big controversy in the avant-garde scene that Mika stole flaming creatures from Jack Smith and Jack Smith really hates him for it. Because the movie was like banned in New York. And so Jonas Mekas was trying to use his filmmakers cooperative to fight for free speech and all that stuff. So he's doing a lot of underground screenings of Flaming Creatures and even got arrested for it and all kinds of stuff like that. But supposedly he made some pretty good money off of those screenings and Jack Smith didn't see any of it because he didn't actually have permission from Jack Smith to use them, and he's real bitter about it. I saw a small documentary where Jack Smith was basically calling Jonas Mekas a lobster, that he's just like feeding off his shit.
Lobster?
Just what? Like crawling, or a crab, I forget, one of those two, but just basically that he's crawling around at the bottom of the ocean, like feeding off Jack Smith's shit, like he's just a parasite.
When avant-garde people start fighting, it's just like
that's the kind of hard-hitting controversy you're going to get on the Loose Cannons podcast. We're going to delve deep into the avant-garde controversies of the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, let's look at some
Armand White and Steve McQueen of the 70s.
Yes.
The 60s and
70s. Screw Khloe Kardashian and Amber Rose. This is the real dirt.
Yes, the real dirt.
That Jonas Mekas then eats and produces his films with.
Oh God. Man.
Yeah, there was one part especially where what did he say? It was a line that I was like, oh, that's actually kind of an interesting, beautiful line. And then, he was talking about when they first moved to Manhattan, I think, and how they were super poor. And he says, we lived on miserable sandwiches and coffee. And I was like, that's a really relatable, like, sad thing to say. But before and after that, he keeps saying, we were so miserable. It was just so miserable. And then he says the line, and I'm like, you could have just said the line, and that would have hit me, but when you keep just saying like, oh my goodness, we were so miserable.
I thought that it got kind of, what did anyone get like a sense of religiosity towards the end of the film? Like there was some music and like people were doing some like weird ritual stuff, and I thought maybe there was like some religious stuff getting in. I didn't get that at all, and I didn't particularly like it, but I don't know if anyone else felt that way.
I don't know. I don't remember exactly what you're talking about. I remember him talking about saying the line about being in the desert, and then if you come back, you'll find me with my roots wide and deep. And then him talking about
Being words, on the beach. It was just sort of like people were like in a field, and they were acting sort of like weird.
I don't remember that. I remember the people running on the beach.
Maybe they were hippies.
Doing hippie stuff, you know?
Hippie stuff.
Dropping acid, having religious experiences.
If you need to, like, take a bit from this podcast and, like, make a best of our podcast, they were in a field doing something weird.
That's
a good one.
That is a good one.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, the roots wide and deep thing, the weirdest thing about that to me is that he starts the story by saying, my friend used to tell a joke. And then he tells that, and I was like, that's a joke? Like,
yeah.
Not really. It did remind me of a Mitch Hedberg joke, though.
Do the Mitch voice.
The Mitch Hedberg, if you're ever lost, build a house. I was lost, but now I live here. I significantly improved my predicament. That was the Mitch Hedberg joke I kept thinking about.
It's pretty good.
There's a part where someone was climbing a tree, sort of, that I liked. Someone was pulling them down while they were trying to climb the tree.
I think that was Jonas Mekas. I think that's where they're in the park with the little kid who's got the gun, right?
Yep.
I also like the end of that scene. Yeah, I like the end of that scene where it looks like they're like leading him away, like they've arrested him, like he's got his hands behind his back.
I like the line, you will never know what someone is thinking at night in New York. I liked it because you'll never know what anyone is thinking, but I like the idea that they added at night in New York, as if it, like, during the daytime you know exactly what people are thinking.
It's because everybody says what they're thinking in New York, right? Everybody just walks around like, I'm hot! My stomach's
hey,
hot.
I'm walking here! Oh, that guy's thinking about walking.
The irony of that statement is also like because all the images are showing like sex shops and blah blah blah, and it's like, oh, so that's what all people in New York are all thinking about at night, apparently. So that's what we can be totally sure of.
Yeah, I didn't like a part when he said we were monks of the Order of Cinema.
Oh, God.
I missed that.
I mean, there was like a ton of that stuff in this movie.
I saw a bit of Titanic the other day, and the old woman, like Kate Winslet, is when she's older, character, says that like a woman's heart is like the ocean that has untold depths like most people can never reach. And I laughed really hard.
Oh, man. James Cameron bringing the poetry.
Yeah. Man, that guy's dialogue is super clunky.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for a really long time, my favorite thing about that movie was there's a part where Kate Winslet's looking at Leo's sketches, and there's a bunch of the same woman, and he's like talking about how he really liked her hands, and then Kate Winslet's like, I believe you must have had a love affair with this woman, and then Leonardo DiCaprio's like, no, just with her hands.
You just got an HJ.
That's just so good.
My favorite part of that movie is when he teaches her how to spit, because she's never spit before.
Yeah, see that, because that's you know, lower class people know how to spit.
How to spit. Right?
That's exactly. An important thing to learn.
Yeah, that's all you do, basically.
You do that cool Irish dancing that they do.
Exactly.
Like,
all you do is engineering.
Man, poverty is that's so awesome, spit. Guys. Super
right up
awesome.
Until the point when they're the first to drown and die.
Right.
In the film.
Right? So romantic.
Right. Yes. But you make just, sure, you know.
Everyone still hears the music as the boat is going down.
Man, yes. Rich people just don't even know what they're missing. Being poor and
they got pride,
and...
man.
Does anyone
they
know which
pride.
Movie is longer? Titanic or this?
Well,
I
this
think
one.
Titanic.
Titanic's longer. Titanic's over 3 hours.
Yeah. This one wasn't quite 3 hours, which I was excited about. I was like, oh, I thought this was longer. It's going to be a little shorter. For a 3-hour movie, it breezes by, I thought. honestly. Like,
I wouldn't go that far.
I didn't feel the thrill of the squad as much.
Breezes by would not be the choice of words.
It doesn't breeze by the way Marie Antoinette breezed by, because that was over 2 hours, and I was like, wow, was that like 90 minutes? 80 minutes, yeah, something? The room was like, that was over 2 hours, and I was like, really?
And then we watched Jean Dielman.
Oh, God.
Same night, and we got the opposite experience.
Speaking of breezing by. I actually think I probably would have liked this movie more if I had actually watched it in one sitting and tried to get into the hypnotic, like what Ruben said, as like the hypnotic quality that it had. Because I agree that it had that. I just couldn't really connect to it. And that, like, basically had to watch the movie in, like, I think 5 or 6 sittings. Like,
yeah.
Well, I really had to, like, kept pausing it and then returning to it. And that obviously didn't help, because now I, like, in my mind, it's all kind of a mush of, like, different things. And
it
I mean, I agree with y'all that some of the things he says is pretty silly. Yeah. But that, like, at a certain point, I sort of just got into the rhythm of it.
Right.
I finished it all in one day. But I would take breaks after each reel. Like, it was like, okay, the reel's over. Get up, go to the bathroom, go get a drink, you know, do something, make a call, send a text, whatever. Then, like, get right back into it. I was sort of doing the same thing with... I'm still currently watching it, but as I was moving ahead, occasionally I saw glimpses of beauty. I've watched the first half of that one already, and I take a break after each chapter. So that kind of helps to, like... dull the fatigue of just like sitting and watching it for a long period.
That one's even longer, right?
Yeah, yes. that one's like 5 hours. Which I'm 2.5 hours into that one now. It's been a couple of weeks on that one. I haven't done as like concentrated a job because we didn't have to do it for the podcast. But his films are I find that to be like I still get. A pretty good cumulative effect of the whole movie, and it doesn't stretch it out too much watching it that way.
I like long movies. I mean, I can't watch them all the time, but I like them.
Yeah.
I feel like I always like them in concept more than I like the process of sitting through them.
Yeah.
I'm always like, that sounds cool. It's 5 hours of like a dude filming his life for 40 years and he condensed it down. And I'm always like, that sounds pretty sweet. And then the idea of actually sitting down to watch it, I'm like, never mind.
Yeah. I had that experience with the movie
Celine. I still want to see the 5-hour cut of Margaret.
Yeah. I had that experience with the movie Celine and Julie Go Boating. I was like, all right, cool. Like a crazy 3-hour French film. And then I sat down and watched it. I was like, oh man, are they going to tell this story again? So it's just like them telling that same story over and over again. And I was like, oh, God.
I guess, like, when I watch those movies with other people, I'm kind of more disciplined about it if I know that all those other people are really intensely watching. Like, we watched the Spectre Out One, Spectre by...
Wow, the 7-hour one? Nice.
By Rivette. And
there's a 4-hour one and a 12-hour one.
And there's a 12-hour one. No, yeah, the Spectre is about... 5 to 6 or 7 hours, I feel like. It was like half the
I think it's movie. A little over half, but yeah.
Yeah, and that was pretty tough to sit through, definitely. And also, like, not, like, also very obscure and very difficult to get into what exactly is going on. Yeah, nice turtles in that movie, for sure. Good turtle acting. But otherwise...
Blue turtling in that movie?
Some blue turtle. Yeah, blue turtling? Exactly. Some more you talking to me references. just so Ruben likes it.
Talk about turtle.
I mean, the length of this movie really shouldn't have been like an issue for me, as you know, as much as like getting into it was. Like, when you don't get into a movie, obviously, then those 2.5 or 2 hours 40 minutes will seem that much longer.
Yeah, one thing I did like about this movie a lot was just that the narrative was so loose that sometimes I would kind of like stop paying attention and then start paying attention again. And whenever I did, it would kind of just like, oh, here's a thing. And I never felt as, I guess, like Mikas was trying to force me to pay attention, like being like, you better watch this because all these parts are important. Like, I think he wouldn't, if I told him that, he probably wouldn't mind. He'd probably be like, eh, all right, you know, because it doesn't feel like a movie where he's really trying to push the whole thing on you. It has a kind of...
Just
so you know, as far as I know, there's an out one that's 4 hours and an out one that's almost 13. There's no 7-hour version.
Really?
Like, I just looked it up.
I thought Spectre was a lot longer. I'm surprised it's only 4 hours.
Yeah, I remember it being longer, but I could also be...
Maybe you only watched, you know, 3/4 of the full one, because apparently it's divided into episodes. But I experience, like, when I'm watching with someone, I experience extremes. I'm either way more disciplined or way more lax. So, like, if I'm watching a movie and, like, the other person is kind of enjoying it, like, my phone's away, I'm paying attention, you know, I'm really watching it. But if I'm watching another movie, like, for instance, when we watched John Dielman and, like, three people bailed out of the movie, like, 20 minutes in, and then it was like, I was able to, like, last an hour, but I probably could have lasted longer if the other people weren't, like, walking around and, like, talking and, like, eating chips and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think everybody turned on that movie pretty quickly. And
I held out the longest. I was like, this is going somewhere.
It's going somewhere, guys. Trust me.
This is famous for a reason.
I mean, if it had gone somewhere, I would have loved it. I thought the beginning was like so slow and methodical and cool, but then it's that for almost the whole runtime. The place that it goes is like the last 5 minutes of the movie.
And then it's just like, ah, she stabbed a guy. That's it. That's all you get.
Spoilers.
Yeah.
Well, it just saved you 3 hours. Congratulations.
I'm probably still going to watch it at some point.
Yeah. I put it on my rewatch list for 2017. If you want to watch it for the podcast, then
yeah. If you put it on your list, I'll vote for it.
Oh dear God in heaven.
I heard two different of my friends texted me that Out One is getting like a digital restoration, like the whole 14-hour cut, and they're going to start showing it in theaters starting next year. So I'm pretty psyched for that. I'll probably go watch it.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll be in a big city by then. I can take a whole day to watch Out One, Noli Mutangra.
That's true.
I feel like the Cine family will show
when it's
it
in a theater and I have to is the only way I'll ever make it all the way through that movie, because I started to watch it when I was really depressed one summer, and I was like, well, I'm not doing anything else with my time. As like on break from school, I was like, might as well watch this 14-hour movie. And then I watched 5 minutes and then stopped and like played a video game instead.
For 14
hours. 13 hours and 55 minutes.
It's probably very accurate.
Yeah.
There's a part in As I Was Moving Ahead where Mika says something like, I don't like drama in movies. Like, I don't like...
Really?
Yeah. And I thought that was really pertinent to what Basil was talking about, where he was like, I could just, like, look away from the movie for a little while and then come back to it and not have to worry about the story and stuff like that. Like, I feel like that's a definite thing with Mika. He's just like, I don't want to give you, like, a super, you know, intense narrative. Like, I just want to sort of give you the free flow of what happened. You'll get
just
the
like
idea.
Daytime TV soap operas. You can just walk away, be in the kitchen, right?
Is that I've never really watched daytime soaps.
Well, I thought that was like the weird like stereotype that they're supposed to work even when you're not in the room. Like, you should still be able to like get everything that's going on when you get back. You're like, oh yeah, that's happening.
I think that the reason for that is more just that they're constantly re-explaining stuff that's already happened.
Yeah. They are super concerned with narrative in those.
There's
about plot.
argument that I remember pretty clearly on Artivision, where Dan was saying that he had enjoyed certain Kiarostami films, even though he fell asleep during them, and that he didn't feel like falling asleep was like a negative part of the film watching process, and that someone was like, if I fall asleep during a movie, it has failed, and like got into a long argument with Dan about that. I thought that was a cool argument to put forward, though, because normally you would think if you fall asleep, that's a definite failure of the movie.
Yeah, I think Kiarostami had that interview where he said like, "Well, I mean, people, I like it. At least I put them to sleep. At least that's a nice thing, you know." And I thought that's
who doesn't like to sleep.
Everybody loves sleeping.
I mean, with Kiarostami, I think you can never be too sure what he's talking about, like whether he's serious, because he really likes to like.
He's a little bit of a troll, yeah.
Pull people's leg a bit when he's giving interviews and stuff. You know that I still remember to this day when like in the Munich Film Fest. I think I actually told this.
Yeah, you told this story.
Yeah, exactly. So that dude that asked him had to ask him a question whether or not he really thinks that women are more interesting than men, and he was like, "Nope, I wasn't serious." next question.
Drop the mic and walk off stage.
Yeah, it's okay that you told it again, because the first time you told it was in the Canon podcast, which only Adam listened to.
Yeah. I was going to say, Rosenbaum actually thought he was serious when he said that, too. He mentioned it in an interview with like a friend of Kiarostami's, and the friend had to be like, I think he was just joking around.
See?
Because, Rosenbaum was like, that really surprised me, because that seems like sort of a sexist thing to say. And then he's like, I think he was just joking around. He likes to joke with interviewers.
Oh, that's funny. Well, at least that dude from the film fest can now say at least Jonathan Rosenbaum had the same opinion, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's the part in close-up where a guy kicks a can, and then the camera just follows the can as it goes like all the way down the hill. 30 minutes. It's pretty great.
I mean, like, in terms of like watching stuff that's like slow and hard to watch, like I still remember when I was a kid, like that's also probably the reason why a lot of Russian movies actually work the way they do, is like there even TV shows, like even the most popular TV show at the time was this TV show about this guy who was a spy during Nazi Germany, and there was like the opening scene was about 20 minutes of this dude just walking around in the forest, coming up to trees and like sniffing them for a bit, and then like continuing to walk, and that just going on for 20 minutes, and that was the most watched television show of this 1960s and 70s in the Soviet Union. So like, I grew up watching that kind of stuff when I was a kid, because they're still showing that show on Russian TV like every year, and it's like still the most popular show ever. So like,
that's awesome.
You know, I could watch like I could watch that and somehow not like get into this, and like that just maybe just a weird thing about my own viewing habits, I guess. I don't know. Like, I can handle. The thing when I get into the mood of something, I could totally watch nothing happening for like 20-30 minutes. Like, it's not a problem. But I have to like something. There has to be like an in for me.
Yeah, your favorite director is Tarkovsky, so it's not like I thought you couldn't watch slow long films.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
You just like them more when they're hard to understand, right?
Exactly.
They're a little more complex.
Don't tell me what the film's about. In fact, don't have it be about anything. Throw the meaning in the trash and have me dig for it. I had the opposite television experience where I'd been watching and enjoying Space Ghost Coast to Coast, and I was like, to my parents. I was like, hey, we should watch an episode. This is really funny and you'll enjoy it. And I just happened to watch the episode where he interviews a person for like 1 minute, and then there's like an ant crawling across his desk, and he follows the ant for 11 minutes, like in almost silence, just the sound of him crawling. Following the ant, and like 8 minutes into him crawling, following the ant, he goes, "Ants are so stupid." It was like one of the two jokes of that episode. My parents were like, "What is this thing that you're watching?" I blame that show for why I'm so weird. That show and Mr. Show.
That show is amazing. I used to watch that. Cartoon Planet was the more accessible version of that show.
If I had watched normal kids shows like football and stuff, I would have grown up to be boring.
Football. Well, I watched football, and I guess I did grow up to be boring. So yeah, you would have.
That's what I think about you, Patrick. You're exceedingly boring.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Football, everything's black and white. Somebody's got to win, somebody's got to lose. Someone's going to win and someone's going to lose if it takes all night.
Does anyone else have anything they want to say about Jonas Mekas or Lost, Lost, Lost?
I mean...
Oh, we're not going to go for 2 3/4 of an hour on this one?
Well... I thought I had full batteries, and it went from 3 to 2 to 1 within the first 10 minutes of me recording for some reason. Okay. So I keep checking my battery to make sure I'm not running out yet.
Yeah. All right, yeah. We don't have to do a podcast that's as long as the movie this time.
Maybe next time.
The podcast.
We can start in the morning, and we can do a live podcast of Satan Tango.
Yeah.
We should do a live podcast someday. Yes. Of us just like all of us like separately watching movies and recording ourselves watching movies.
We should do a live podcast.
Commentary.
And then we'll just be talking over each other.
Exactly.
Well, it'd be like in front of an audience. We'll do it in front of an audience. We'll have like a couple of our friends sitting around in front of us.
Audience of pre-scheduled like laughs and claps on like a boombox.
Like meticulously engineered.
All right. Now this
to sound like as if there's people.
This is where they use the Kuleshov effect.
I think this is a great way to end Avant-Garde Month, by the way, because this is like an Avant-Garde podcast where we just. We only talked about the actual thing for like 30 minutes. And now we've just been talking about other stuff for the last 20.
Oh, wait, you froze there. We didn't hear that.
This was even more avant-garde because you were just like completely just not there for a second.
Well, you'll hear when you listen to the podcast itself. You guys were nice enough to be quiet while I was talking, even though I was frozen.
Yeah, it's happened before, so we were ready for it this time.
Yeah.
But we have no idea what you just said, so this is fun.
Gonna wait for that podcast to come out.
Now Basil will have to listen to it.
The suspense. Suspense.
All right.
He has to go to sleep. I feel like we covered the movie pretty well. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for joining us in Avant-Garde Month. We'll be returning to our regularly scheduled program next month, I believe. And then in June, we're going to have another theme month. Theme months all over the place. We're going to be having back some of your favorite guest hosts. And we're actually going to do movies that they want to talk about, as opposed to us forcing them to do movies that we want to talk about.
Yeah, trying something new.
But don't worry, they didn't pick any like more popular movies than what we choose.
Yeah, it's still movies everyone hasn't ever heard of,
like Furious 7 and Mockingjay Part 1.
Exactly.
Thanks for listening. go on to iTunes and subscribe to the podcast if you're enjoying it. Give us a nice review and a 5-star rating. And hey, you know, maybe go onto the website and post what your favorite avant-garde films are, or avant-garde directors are. You know, we can talk about avant-garde on the website. We do occasionally check it to see if people have been commenting. And we will respond, since we like interaction, as this podcast shows.
Yeah. Plus, we're like 4 people. One of us will eventually respond, probably. There's yep. a good chance.
Yeah, so do that, and we will see you next time. Bye!
Bye!
Bye.
My fingers smell like tacos.
Tacos.